start by thanking the Luan and the Global Labor Research Center for the invitation to talk today, and to all of you for being here. And of course, very special thanks for Anna for agreeing to be part of the panel. I feel very bad Ruth is not here because part of the work I'm going to talk about later in my presentation I have produced with, I am working with Ruth, so anyway, I'm sure she would have been able to give you a lot more details than I would, but I will try my very best without Ruth today. So, the presentation, the idea for the presentation came from some work I published recently in a book that is called Labor in Neoliberal Latin America. This is a chapter on Argentina I produced for that book. And in it we try to place the main tensions of the organized labor movement in Latin America in the context of the challenges emerging from the 90s, but moving on all the way to the new century, particularly labor under the more progressive regimes that characterize the region at this time. I want to start by, I know not everybody might know a lot about labor movement in Argentina, so I will try to make some historical connections. But I wanted to start by saying that I think few other countries of the region in Latin America, organized labor movement in Argentina, it has been a central to politics in the country. This started all the way back at the turn of the previous century with a very active and organized labor movement, very influenced by more radical perspectives, more radical views, particularly anarcho-syndicalism, communism, and socialism. But this was a very strong labor movement, enough to give populism that in Argentina started in the 40s a particular bent. It was a form of populism a lot more attuned to the whole language of labor at the time, right? So and in a case like Argentina, you can see the constitution of this more modern political sphere in very heavily influenced by the language of labor and the demands of labor, and it was actually labor unions that became the carriers of demands that represented much broader sectors of the population. So it started in the 40s too, and once reconstituted as a movement through populism and the Peronist Party, and particularly the influence of Perón, unionism became a major political player, and it was central to the political conflicts of the country since then. On the positive side, having such a strong labor movement connected to the government and having given this shape by a regime like Domingo Perón's, it makes the labor movement, again, very powerful, very effective, and that explains in some ways the more equal distribution of income of Argentina when compared to other countries, also the high rates of protection that workers enjoy, and also, and more generally, high levels of welfare protection within Argentina when compared to other countries of the region, of course. But there were also major problems that come from the way in which the labor movement was constituted and reshaped at this time. And is that what is going to be the focus, trying to elucidate what are these shortcomings and how do we explain them is my attempt with what I'm going to attempt to do today. So in particular, then I want to understand what has happened with the labor movement started in the new century and the more progressive regimes, but I see this is a broader question, I think, that is of interest to beyond Argentina, and that is the connection of the governments we call the think tank in Latin America with political actors like the organized labor movement. The connecting idea throughout my conversation today, or what I think is my connecting idea, or you will tell me if I'm connecting anything at all, is the relationship between the labor movement and the Peronist Party in particular. And I consider that relationship central in order to understand the position of labor in connection to the labor movement more generally, to historically to the connections and challenges and conflicts with more progressive forces within the labor movement and also its own internal divisions. Ultimately, I think that this is what changed fundamentally started in the 90s with the labor movement. And by labor movement, I should probably clarify, I'm going to mainly focus on the main confederation of labor in Argentina, the CGT, I'm going to call it CGT, right, the General Confederation of Labor. That has been the pinnacle organization of unions in Argentina, but also a key force within the Peronist Party. So I see that tension, right, between the role of the CGT as representing the official labor movement and the Peronist Party as explaining a number of the transformations that have taken place over the last 15 years. And hopefully that will help us look into the future, right? As you will see, and I'm going to say, to make a long story even longer, I thought of raising, like just providing a very general background for those of you who do not know, and I know some people know here that I like to make long stories, but let me just then start by providing a general background. And also, I would like to say now, please do not hesitate to raise your hand and stop me if there is any need for clarification or any question at this time. I thought of a very first period in general, started in the 40s and into the 1970s, that I broadly, very broadly categorized as the rise of Peronism, growing polarization, and political radicalization. Right? That would take us to the mid-1970s. So, what first, of course, is the consolidation of Peronism, that I thought of, two points I wanted to raise about this, and one was the political identity that Peronism created for the labor movement in Argentina. That is probably quite unique in the context of the region. And transform then the role of labor, of labor since then. Labor has been very powerful before, to be sure, but it has been also quite unsuccessful in the case of Argentina to see reforms that responded to their main demands. It was Perón's power, really, to provide some form of accommodation and render the power of the state somehow at the service also of some of these demands. Of course, Perón was building his own alliance, and this was a political calculation, but nonetheless, the fact remains that labor became a very powerful political force within, as a political actor, but also within the Peronist Party itself. And the force of labor as a political actor within the Peronist Party can be seen starting with the ousting of Perón in 1955. You don't need to know any of this. I won't ask any questions. I just wanted to mention then that it is then this critical 20 years between the ousting of Perón and the last military dictatorship in 1960. I'm forgetting even more. And the military dictatorship of 1976. So that set a particular dynamic to the political conflict in Argentina, in which labor unions were successful enough as representing a counter alliance, were strong enough to stop any attempt to reduce their income levels. But not strong enough to actually secure a more stable pattern of economic growth that benefited them in the long term. So no government was able to resist the pressure from labor and the labor opposition. All governments, including military regimes, collapsed. So labor did really play a fundamental role in this process. And labor learned through this too to negotiate with everyone, right? Like the CGT was at home within the Peronist Party, but the CGT managed to extract very important concessions from all governments, including the anti-labor military regimes of the time. Right? So they also saw some benefits also in securing these negotiations with the CGT. I just want to mention, this is the point. The Peronist Party was banned during this time, was proscribed from running in elections at the national level. So it was, the Peronist Party has been kind of loosely organized. The strongest force within the party was, again, the labor movement. So labor then acquired this enormous power to broker the Peronist vote during this election. So the Radical Party, the second major party in Argentina, needed to negotiate with the CGT so that the CGT would mobilize votes at the times of elections, for presidential elections. So we can see then this is a major political actor, right? There was really no other actor that equal in power. Not even, well, of course, the military has the military force that accounted for a lot. But even then, for example, extending major concessions to the working class, to the CGT at the time. One of them, in 1968, I think was, it was the administration of healthcare plans, which provided an enormous amount of financial resources for the unions, right? So, like, the unions were able to collect the fees for these union-run health plans that, again, made them one of the most important and also financial players in the country. So that was extended to them by a military coup, by a military regime, so just so that to put things in perspective, right? So now, what characterized this period, and this is what I wanted to stop and discuss a little bit, was that increasingly through this process, the political conflict became more polarized, more radicalized on both sides. Like, so the left wing became a lot more influential, and it was the party, the Peronist Party itself, that became the site of this conflict, right? So, like, it was society at large, but it was also the Peronist Party. And so this is the time where the Peronist Party itself then became this very broad umbrella, with Perón living in Spain in exile, became this broad political umbrella that attracted groups from a whole range of ideologies, ranging from Marxist Leninism all the way to ultra right. Right. So the civil war in Argentina started in 1973. Really starts within the Peronist Party itself. Right. So this is kind of the site of the most violent political conflict is the Peronist Party. Then the CGT was at the core of this. The CGT being an extremely conservative force at the time, but overseeing the process of massive radicalization of the labor bases and unions the emergence of a whole movement for union renewal that challenged the power of the leadership of the union. It didn't fare very well for this more radical movement, starting with I just wanted to mention before, let me just make a little note, so that this military regime that was the longest at the time, right, these are 7 years, came, one of the main principles of this was, like, there was no way of returning back to Peronism, right? After 7 years, it was forced to call elections, free elections for the... it didn't call free elections, right? They called elections with the Peronist Party won with the candidacy of Héctor Cámpora. And once in power, he called new elections, the first free elections since 1952. So he called free elections, and Domingo Perón himself returned to Argentina as the president. He oversaw a period of... I mean, while he was alive for 1 year, after that, he was able to kind of contain all these forces within the Peronist Party. But after his death, it exploded. And again, it was civil war, and it started within the Peronist Party. His wife, who was the vice president, became the president, and over these last two periods, and there was a very bloody period, and labor unions were at the core of it, and part of this violence was directed toward these new, more progressive political forces that were emerging in the labor movement. So, so after this period then of growing militarization and polarization, we had the military regime of 1976 to 83, which I think we all know it was a very brutal regime, and it imposed the first neoliberal program in Argentina. I'm going to be very brief with that. I just only want to mention, just to give you an idea, the core of the military idea was actually how to change a pattern of development that, according to them, had made possible for labor to acquire this kind of power. So, liberalization, deregulation, increasing competition were key tools, according to the military, to make it impossible for labor to defend their own income levels and to activate these labor conflicts that have taken Argentina to the brink of this civil war. So, but the military solution was basically to exterminate everybody who opposed this basic premise, right? Just to give you an idea, people know of the problem of the disappeared in Argentina, but of the 30,000 disappeared in Argentina by 1978, 40% were union leaders at the grassroots level. So the key strategy of the military was to eliminate opposition within the working class and to neutralize the CGT, right? They didn't need to kill them. They neutralized the leadership of the CGT by incarcerating some of them and banning unions. But nonetheless, within 2 years, the CGT was there again, creating some kind of problems for the military regime. So the CGT has really been always very powerful. The end of the dictatorship, then, I mean, this is the point I want to make, also means the end in Argentina of the whole period of union renewals or challenges to the power of the CGT as this bureaucratic institution. So we start democracy in Argentina with a major deficit in terms of political options for the labor movement. Not only were the people physically eliminated, but some of the ideas that have fostered this union renewal actually were views that we are not considered as viable in Latin America, right? Like socialism became like this crazy idea, and so. So this is then democratization in Argentina, in the rest of Latin America, it starts then with these major deficits and very narrow definitions of the process or what was at stake in the process. In the process of change, it also, while the CGT regained a lot of its power at the time, was able to challenge the government. By the way, notice that the Peronist Party lost the first free election in its history, the second one being in 2015. And part of it, the party blamed on the CGT itself as being identified with this kind of violence that engulfed Argentina starting in the late 60s. Right? So the CGT had this challenge from the party, but it regained some of its strength at the time. And I see now that my time has gone in history. Okay, but I just think that it is a. To me, it is one of the key deficits in this moment, and this is also then democracy returns to Argentina, but without labor playing any key role in actually questioning the meaning of democracy or raising the possibility of democracy extending to other spheres, particularly to union activity. So it is, and it seems to me, has consequences for later on. Now, this whole change, Argentina goes through this very, very traumatic experience of failed adjustments during the 1980s, in which the CGT again was able to produce major crises when the government didn't respond to its demands, right? So, all of a sudden, there is this person within the Peronist Party, Carlos Menem, that came to talk again about redistributive struggles and justice, and there goes the CGT, thinking that a second chance has come to them, right? Like to reassert its power within the party. But we don't know, it didn't work out quite that way. So Menem actually moved on to implement the most radical program of neoliberal reforms the military wouldn't have there. Of course, he did it in a moment of complete crisis in Argentina with inflation rates of about 2,000%. So that gave the government enormous power. It had completely diminished the power of workers, too, under these conditions. I mean, there is very little workers can do to struggle to recover some of the losses. But anyway, it is the government of Menem that imposed a very radical program of reform, including labor reform. Now, 2 points I wanted to make about these labor reforms. Most of the reforms aimed at reducing what we describe as individual labor rights, right? Rights in terms of collective agreements, working hours, salary levels, retirement, health protection. But the CGT was quite adamant and effective, as it has been always, in defending its main collective rights, the rights that they consider fundamental to sustain its power. And fundamental, two things in Argentina. I mentioned one, the health plans, right, that gave the unions an enormous amount of financial might. The other one was the right of only one union per sector to represent workers in collective agreements, like what we call personería gremial in Spanish, right? So that has been the pillars of the power of unions in Argentina, and the CGT really made those the focus of their defense. So eventually they were not effective, but it didn't matter because Menem had to sidetrack on some of these. And the new administration that took over in 1999 also moved very forcefully in trying to take these two rights from labor, but the CGT regained those. And most of the discussions about labor in Argentina make the point that, well, this is the success of the strategy, right? Like, core collective rights were protected in Argentina. My argument in my chapter is slightly different, that yes, it did it, but the price it paid for that would forever diminish and cloud its political power, right? Like, it became not only allowed for this radical change to take place in Argentina, the working class became a lot more heterogeneous, there was massive levels of unemployment, underemployment, precarity, informality, so unions lost a lot of their political power anyway, so regardless of whether these reforms were passed or not. I also wanted to make the case that formal reforms in the context of Argentina, probably, and I would have much more to say about that, were really irrelevant in the context of the transformation that was taking place. In some way, the capitalists in Argentina did want the formalization of labor flexibilization, wanted to see laws. But in reality, the laws didn't matter at the time. There was a reality in the labor markets that made impossible the exercise of rights. Right? So this clearly is the case in Argentina. So it didn't matter where laws were later on changed or by that time, workers had very little chance of exercising their own rights in the context of the rates of unemployment of almost 25%, 40% informality and precarity. So, I mean, people with a job just simply don't have a chance to exercise the rights that according to the law they have. So this then this period, in my view, then transformed the CGT, even if it retains its institutional power. It became a different political actor, one completely associated with the government that has introduced these changes. Moreover, the CGT itself became part of the accumulation of the time, right? Benefiting from privatizations, the privatization of the retirement funds, the privatization of labor, the accident insurance. So, in the eyes of, I think that the connection with the grassroots completely changed at the time, and that eventually produced a major change within the party itself. Now it was possible to avoid the CGT in conversations within the Peronist Party without risking much politically. And so I want to, as you know, then then this neoliberal experiment in Argentina ended up in the most serious economic crisis a country used to economic crisis, I should add, is the most serious economic crisis Argentina has ever seen, right? By the end of 2001, basically the economy has evaporated in Argentina, right? So that led to a major collapse, and poverty rates reach about 54% in a country that historically has had like in one digit. So this has been a major structural change in the country. And again, the CGT in some ways has been part of it. And part of the price it paid, as I mentioned, was the reduction in its influence within the party. The other one was the rapid growth of alternative organizations within the labor movement. It's also at this time, at the end of the 90s, that the CGT becomes, for the first time, a secondary force in the labor force. Compared to the movement of the unemployed, for example, people might remember the name Piqueteros, although I realize that people probably, I think all these things happening now, some people were in kindergarten. But anyway, there was a big movement of the unemployed in the 90s in Argentina called Piqueteros, but also unions that have a split from the CGT, particularly in the public sector. And they form a new and alternative labor organization called the CTA, the Central of Argentinian Workers. Mm-hmm. And they contested the CGT's power, and again, they were the ones at the head of the very drastic moment, the very broad moment of mobilization in Argentina by 2001 that resulted in the collapse of the regime, right? There was no other option at that time for the government to go. But it was the Peronists that kind of won from this in this process, right? And they were able to provide a few caretaker government, but I don't know whether they took care of much. But anyway, they did provide the three governments in the transition in Argentina. They were from the Peronist Party. To the election in 2003 of Néstor Kirchner. And there comes the big change that I wanted to talk about, but I will talk a little bit.
We have time.
Yeah.
We have time.
Okay. The election of Néstor Kirchner in 2003 signal in Argentina a new change. As I mentioned, by 2001, the economy has pretty much evaporated, but it recovered very rapidly too, right? I mean, with the devaluation favored some sectors in the economy, there was rapid economic growth. The political situation was more unstable, but Néstor Kirchner, just to give you an example, to put it in electoral terms, Néstor Kirchner was only elected with 22% of the vote. So like it is a very frail government, has run against other Peronists, run against Carlos Menem again, who actually received more votes than he did, Menem knew that he would lose his second round of votes, so he conceded the election to to Kirchner. But so Kirchner has this problem, right? Like the economy seems to start to grow again, but has no coalition supporting him. So his first order of government is to try to procure that alliance. And here again, of course, comes the secretary into the picture, right? So he needs the support of Labour. Starting with Kirchner, Labour became part of the alliance, but so did all these other sectors from marginalized groups that have remained outside the unemployed in particular, the precariously employed, informal workers. So they became also key part of the alliance. I can talk a little bit more later about the consequences of that. But Kirchner did extremely well politically. Like 2 years in the midterm elections, 2005, he was able to secure a very strong majority. Nonetheless, with the economy running, at this time, Argentinian economy favored both the devaluation, but also an export boom in the country, produced some of the highest, and some of the highest rates of economic growth, sustained economic growth in Argentina. Some of you might see. This is 2002, where the economy has lost about 10%. There was a rapid process of economic growth during this time, about 9% per year. Again, in terms of Argentinian history, is very high for a sustained period of time, right? So it is at the peak of this moment of economic growth. A lot of formal employment was being created at the time. The rates of poverty are going down. The government has instituted all these social protection programs. So Néstor Kirchner decides not to run for re-election, although he could, but instead it's his wife that takes the role. And so she was elected as president in 2007 and won two elections. While the CGT has managed to become part of the alliance in power with Néstor Kirchner, the relationship changed drastically with Cristina Kirchner. Right? Cristina Kirchner had two problems, right? Like the economy started to grow, was growing very rapidly. By 2009, Argentina faced a major economic challenge, right? Like the global recession had very serious consequences for the country. It recovered very rapidly, as you can see. By 2010, they reached even higher rates of economic growth, but the tendency was clear at the time of growing economic tension. There was a need to control the rise of wages. And so Cristina's education started to develop a tense connection with the CGT. In fact, by 2011, they entered into an open process of conflict with the CGT after her re-election. But Cristina Kirchner wasn't too worried about this at the time. In 2011, she actually won election with 54% of the votes, the highest in the history of Argentina. In the first round, right, 54%. So that to Cristina Kirchner meant that the CGT was not really that important in the alliance, right? That they could be angry at her. Workers would vote for her anyway. So what she did was to try to consolidate alliances with other sectors, sectors that were again available for political mobilization. In particular, the marginalized sectors, the sectors that had no benefit from economic growth, the unemployed, informal workers, street vendors, And I have to say there is a lot of discussion about this, as to like there you have it again, the mobilization of traditional populist strategies. One could see that way, so people then understand some of the social programs and some of the social changes in Argentina, the welfare changes, responding to the same logic. And there I see a problem, right? Like, I mean, I do think that some of the policies implemented by the government that were universal in character, like pensions for those who were informally employed, for example, for the first time there was a scheme of a pension plan for them. There was a universal child benefit. I don't see those things as being part of the of patrimonial or populist logic, right? I really think that in some ways the government tried to extend these universal rights to these sectors that were very important. I mean, there were a very large segment of the population, around 30%, probably more. They also passed the first a law protecting women workers at home, like these are mostly mm-hmm. women. So this was also, in my mind, an important transformation. Nonetheless, the conflict started within the CGT and Cristina Kirchner, as it usually happens, ended up with the division of the CGT, right? Not knowing how to respond to the government, or so results in the division of the CGT. This is a historical trend too, right, in the CGT. But sadly enough, this kind of period of confrontation and not knowing how to respond to this government, that in some ways is providing some elements of incorporation to sectors that have been really marginalized, but it has some political, very conflictive policies and overtones, devised the CTA too. That at some point, remember I mentioned this organization that has grown, that at some moment represented in the expectation of a renewal of labor movement in Argentina, an organization based on democratic practices and autonomy from the state and political parties. All of a sudden, it cannot also respond to this new political situation. Part of it goes with the government, the CTA, and then became connected to the government of Cristina Kirchner. Another one remained autonomous. The movement of the unemployed and marginalized sectors suffers a similar fate, right? So some sectors have become part of the government that produce an enormous division within this movement. Cristina Kirchner tries to reorganize them and give them a new political voice. So we see then a moment of construction, I would say political construction, that again doesn't fare well for the working class and its organizations. So Cristina Kirchner lost elections in 2015 to, again, a very conservative government that claimed many of the same principles of the 1990s, of classical liberal thought. Unions are the problem to economic growth. They need to reduce the deficit of the state. I mean, very package of policies. These are the last 4 years in Argentina where the CGT has also not come out very clean, right? Like, I mean, for the most part, they really attempt to keep communication open with the government and according to them, negotiate. I suggest I can talk a bit more about this during the question period. The CGT always has the eyes in one big prize, right? And the big prize is its role within the Peronist Party, right? So at this moment, the CGT tries to show itself as capable of containing social mobilization, because third, well, that allows them to negotiate with the government, allows them to keep some of the forces. Again, the government tries to implement a labor law challenging the rights of unions to negotiate collective agreements. I mean, the same scenario of the 90s. The CGT responds pretty much the same way, right? So, but as I mentioned, the Peronist Party is also divided at this time, so the CGT sees its capacity to regain positions, and this is the big prize for the CGT, right? So it's a labor movement, and I would say one of the structural problems in Argentina, then I'm trying to reach some conclusion, is that the political, the leaderships have seen their political future connected to their protection of their rights within the state. Right? So like they create this very strong connection and dependence to the state. And in the case of the CGT, also to the political party. And now, Macri has a tragic experience for Argentina over the last 4 years, right? Like we are back again, probably 2019 was the worst year since 2001, right? So like again, so the repetition of neoliberal policies, the same kind of policies, leading exactly to the same kind of results, right? So it's kind of a tragic story when you talk to people in Argentina. I mean, it is the point that I said, I don't know whether they are hopeful about change. I think that what you hear from most people is that, well, can it really be worse? Right? Like, I mean, this is the position of a lot of people. Now, the government, the CGT then, is again trying to position itself with the Peronist Party, and the elections were won by the Peronist Party, but Cristina Kirchner is the vice president, so I mean the conflict is there, right, with the CGT. Now, the CGT, again, is offering the government the tools to implement the social pact that the government desperately needs. I was going to show you the inflation rates, right? Inflation is historically a constant in Argentinian economy. Inflation and hyper inflation at points. But the government has facing 52% inflation rate. Right? Real salaries have deteriorated radically. The government is also facing an enormous foreign debt crisis. It has to do something with that. So obviously, it needs the labor movement. It needs the CGT to contain labor demands, basically. And this is once again the role of the CGT: its capacity to show that it can contain. It can contain labor demands. But there is a whole other set of demands that are out there, and I am an optimistic in the... people don't think so. But, like, there are some claims, some demands, and some organizing within the labor movement that the CGT can no longer contain. And that is the awareness about the shortfalls of this approach to unionism and to politics. And the need to introduce some kind of more transparency, more and greater degrees of democracy within unions. The need to renew the labor leadership. I mean, there are leaders in unions who have been there for 30 years, 40 years, right? Like they never lose elections. So there is, I think, a movement outside the CGT once again, right? And to finish that, in my view, probably has now the historical opportunity to really introduce some changes. My final point, not to eliminate the CGT. Right? Interestingly, the labor movement in Argentina see the CGT as the natural space. They want it modified, they want it democratized, but they don't see any hope outside of it either, right? Like there is not a movement to create any alternative force. The CTA is trying to return to the CGT. The movement of the informal workers that has become very, very powerful, representing 2 million people. They want to become a union within the CGT too, challenging the notion of who is a worker, and this is what I'm working with Ruth. And so the CGT is in a space of contention, and like Peronism itself, is the sphere that will continue to grab at people's political imagination, right? I don't see, but there is a challenge, and that to me it provides some space for hope at this time. And I will stop here.
Okay. Anna, over to you.
Thank you very much, Viviana. Very, very much. I learned a huge amount from this, and you know, it, for me, it answered some questions, and it made me realize that questions that I have, because I'm planning to address this in the context of labor reform in Mexico, I can't answer for Mexico either. So I was thinking about a question that I wanted to ask you, and I realized that I have the same question about the PRI in Mexico, which is, and so it made me realize that, A, that there's parallels, there are certain parallels between the two cases, but also that the problem is more complicated than something that one can answer quickly. So, I mean, the first thing I was thinking about, which I think for me, you know, as somebody who doesn't know the Argentinian context well at all, I never fully understood was how in the Peronist parties the left and the right coexisted. So as I was thinking about that question, I realized that basically in the PRI in Mexico, the left and the right also coexisted, you know, I don't have a clear answer for that either, except for that these were parties that managed to effectively consolidate developmental states in the 20th century, and they did do that effectively. So I guess my question is, you know, when you, given that I think that my first question would be, given that there's these similar sort of corporatist elements where labor is sort of depoliticized in a sense, so the CGT or the equivalent of the corporatist unions in Mexico are sort of depoliticized because of their relationship with the ruling party. You know, which forces even the left in labor to try and kind of hold on to power instead of seeking, you know, more real change. What are the factors now that prevent, you know, as you were saying, I guess the CAT and the informal workers from saying, no, we don't want to do this within the existing labor structures. We want a completely autonomous sort of movement, more along the lines of the FAT in Mexico, and seek to completely overhaul policy.
Yeah, sure. But first thing, because I don't think nobody at this point is seeking any alternative to the CGT. On the contrary, I think that the CGT is in the moment where it might regain all the sectors that at some point left. Like the CTA is talking about coming, is coming back to
because of left.
Yeah, because again, like I think, I mean, I don't know how to explain. It's the same way. The time to explain Peronism, right? Like, I mean, it's the way people fight within Peronism as to what is the real interpretation of Peronism, right? Like, what is the real meaning, the political meaning of Peronism? And I, you say, well, why don't they create an alternative political party? Mm-hmm. Because they see Peronism as the channel to changing that. I think that forever it has remained a party that, captured effectively these ideas about change, of the possibility of justice, and the representation of a broad range of different interests too, right? And I think that the second day plays very much a similar role. Like, you know, like I see lately with Ruth again. We have been studying informal workers in Argentina and their capacity to organize. And again, these workers are a very broad range of forces, from Christian influence to groups that have been very close to Cristina Kirchner to the radical left. They have all kind of they have all gathered in this new organization, the Central of Popular Economy Workers. And they don't want to create an alternative union. They want to be part of the CGT. And their struggle is to be recognized by the CGT as a legitimate union, right? And you say, why? Well, why? Because I think that the CGT, like the Peronist Party, I mean, it's an incredibly powerful institution, right? Institutionally, it has, it's a big apparatus, right? And I think that the idea of people is to capture this for their own advantage. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, again, and probably there is hope in this. Right? I mean, this is my point, that in these forces gathering within the Sacred Day and challenging from within some of the union bureaucracy, right, which is huge, to be sure. But I see that it is probably a historical opportune moment, because this is a leadership that, in my mind, is for the first time, is really weakened. Right? I mean, it has been weakened by its participation. So, while they remain there, it is kind of, it's an empty victory to some extent too. Right? I mean, it is a moment where you can challenge them from within and from below. Right, that it is the Sacred Day. Probably I'm being too optimistic, but that it is a vulnerable moment for them. Right? So I see there a possibility of change.
Okay. Very interesting. I mean, you know, coming in today, I was thinking about the labor reform in Mexico, which is seen as historic. You know, potentially historic, and I've seen by the contradictions in the fact that now it's the Trump administration that is trying to uphold the Mexican labor legislation.
Yes.
And one of the pieces I was reading, trying to sort of prepare for your talk, was talking about how, you know, the reason that the outgoing regime was unsuccessful is that it was implementing neoliberalism, as you were describing, in a moment of increasing protectionism, and that it didn't sort of respond to the kind of protectionist trends coming out of the Trump administration, and instead it was just further neoliberalizing the Argentinian economy. So given that, I guess maybe this is one of the reasons why the CFT, as you're describing it, would have renewed power in a moment of increased protectionism globally. But, you know, why not push for, well, I guess you've already asked this question, you know, why not push for more democratic labor movements that could, you know, actually bring about real wins in different sectors?
But well, you know, in my chapter, one of the points I argue is that one of the big deficits of this progressive period in Argentina, of course, people will have problems my categorizing Cristina Kirchner and Néstor Kirchner as progressive. I do think that in many ways they are, particularly if you compare what happened with Macri, right? I mean, I think that there are elements there. As, of course, it is contradictory, and politics is never kind of clear cut, and particularly in the case of peronism, right? Like, I mean, let me just say, like, also, Néstor Kirchner, in particular, not because he was a particularly progressive person, but because I think they saw a moment in Latin America, right? And they oppose, and they had this kind of confluence of interest with some regimes in the region, in terms of a more in opposition to the IMF, for example. They saw the need for some regional some regional cooperation. They addressed the problem of the 50% of the population that was living under the line of poverty, right? I mean, something needed to be done then, and so they sort of addressing like any other, like other governments in the region, right? Like we call the think tank. So people think of the Kirchners as representing what we call the left wing of Peronism, right? And probably it is kind of a good depiction. And by the way, the CGT was opposed to the Kirchners, right? They supported another candidate in the elections of 2003 because the CGT has never seen itself as part of the left wing of Peronism. On the contrary, I would say, right? So, I mean, these are the contradictions, right? You have a very strong labor movement, but it's also very conservative. But because it has had all these constant challenges from outside, it also has to produce some results for workers, right? So probably then, I'm not even hitting my paper, but you can, corporatism provides only a kind of a limited view of labor movements, right? Insofar as it focuses the lens on the connection between this official labor movement and the state, but you cannot understand that outside of the context of more broader struggles in the labor movement, right? That constantly force this corporatist leadership to respond to the challenges, to adjust, and to kind of provide some benefits for the working class, right? That you cannot just run on repression alone. And so, particularly for unions, right? They cannot forever repress opposition. They have to legitimize their rule in some way. Anyway, I had gone in I don't know in what direction, but the original question was about...
Well, I'm thinking I might ask one last question, then there's a question from the audience. So it's actually, it kind of extends the analysis, I guess, continentally, which is that, you know, Argentina and Mexico are now, I suppose, the largest economies in Latin America with progressive,
yes,
nominally progressive, left-leaning-ish governments. And what role do you see the new government of the territories playing in conditions in which, you know, the pink tide has receded,
yes,
and in relationship to Brazil?
Yeah, in particular with Brazil, there are already a lot of conflicts. Mm-hmm. Right? Brazil has said it won't negotiate with Argentina at all, and there are a number of conflicts. The main issue for Argentina now is surviving. It's trying to find a way out of the crisis. Right? I mean, they have this enormous fiscal crisis, external crisis. They have this very high inflation rate. So that is now the big challenge, and an isolation, right, from the rest of Latin America, of course. Right? At some point, there was Venezuela, there was Ecuador, there were other countries, I suppose, that could have provided some option. Today, there is nothing. So the government has tried to set limits to the IMF, but it will have to negotiate with the IMF, for example. I don't think it can tell the IMF, that's it, right? Forget it. And so, I mean, it's trying to negotiate some better terms. And in that, though, I see they need the secretary too, right, fundamentally, to control and mediate domestic conflict, right? But yeah, it is a very difficult moment. And as many people raise the possibility that the norm might not last. Like, the crisis is such, it has such proportions, right, that the government is incredibly vulnerable. But in the context of Argentina, I mean, the right wing doesn't have any option either. I mean, the only option they might have is a military coup, but I don't think that's going to happen, right? The right wing, again, at this moment, Macri produced a disaster, right? Nonetheless, I mean, there is about 40% of the population that continues to support him, which is not minor. It's the same situation as the U.S. Yeah? You should say, well, how is this possible? But the support is there, right? But anyway, it is a very difficult moment in Latin America. But that's why it is all the more important, I think, to have a... to see Argentina, the cases of Argentina and Mexico in this context. And sometimes I think that we invest too much in seeing in what way these governments are not really progressive or that. But when you see the alternatives in Latin America, I mean, I'm probably I sound extremely. Conservative myself, but it seems to me like things need to be placed in context. It need to be contextualized, right? So I don't think that this government is going to produce any radical change, and it won't do it because it doesn't have the means to do it. Right? It's incredibly vulnerable, mm-hmm, to a number of pressures. So the issue is in this context. How are the organizations of the working class going to secure some kind of
improvements to the lives of working people, because it has reached again the degree of Christ. It's a calamity in Argentina, basically. Mm-hmm.